Abraham Lincoln famously said, "Most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be." You see, your happiness is determined not by what other people do, but by what you do. Just like with your success. If you don't make the effort, you have no right to be disappointed or frustrated with your lack of happiness in life. You've heard me say something similar when it comes to your goals. Well, in order to make sure that we meet our happiness goal through hard work and smart choices, I asked Dr. Christine Carter to sit down with us here today. Christine Carter is a sociologist, happiness expert at UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center. She is also the author of Raising Happiness, 10 Simple Steps for More Joyful Kids and Happier Parents. Best known for her happiness and parenting advice, Christine draws on psychology, sociology, and neuroscience, and of course, her own chaotic and often hilarious real-world adventures to demonstrate the do's and don'ts in action. Christine, well, I can say that I am happy you were able to sit down with us today, without pun intended. Welcome to success.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I am also happy to be here.
So let's start with the obvious question, at least as a baseline for the rest of our discussion. Explain why happiness matters. What impact does it truly have on our success if we are or aren't completely happy?
Well, actually, it has a much bigger impact on our success than most people realize. Our emotions tend to direct our blood flow in our body, but also in our brain. And so positive emotions dramatically affect our performance in terms of our ability to be creative, to solve problems, to be verbally fluent. So if we are to fulfill our potential, if we are to be successful, we really do need to harness our positive emotions. And for most people, that looks like happiness.
Well, you're talking our language here. So let's bring this down to the individual, something that all of us listening can use. I mean, happiness is such an individual thing, dependent upon your personal ideals, goals, and ambitions. Yet, like anything, I think the right place to start is with a good definition of what we're focusing on. So give us guidelines for defining our individual happiness.
I think the best way to think about our individual happiness is to step away from a focus on pleasure or gratification. I think a lot of us really tend to confuse a little hit of pleasure or something that is very gratifying with actually more profound joy or happiness. And so the way that I think about a happy life is the way that researchers define a person as flourishing, which is somebody who has, in general, a ratio of three or more positive emotions to one negative emotion. So when we have that ratio of more positive emotions to then negative emotions, we reach what researchers think of as a tipping point, right? Just like water freezes into ice or ice melts into water, these tipping points change our ability to move through the world. And so that flourishing tipping point is where we really start to see markers of a truly happy person. So positive emotions are really important, I think, to think about and define for people as well. Happiness is just one positive emotion that takes place in the present, goes with contentment or engagement. But we also really need to think about positive emotions about the past, like gratitude or appreciation, about the future, hope, optimism, faith. Confidence is a really important positive emotion about the future. Our most powerful positive emotions are actually about other people. So that would, of course, be love and compassion. And then at the Greater Good Science Center, we study global positive emotions like awe, inspiration, elevation. A happy life is full of this whole range of positive emotions. Now, interestingly, a happy life is not just about having all these positive emotions. It's also about the ratio of positive to negative. So all lives, even very happy ones, involve difficulty, and difficulty involves negative emotions. So the happiest people, though, are able to deal with those negative emotions in an efficient way so that it doesn't throw that ratio off.
So I think you said something there that I really want to dig into deeper, because the challenge I've got with this whole happiness movement is it all feels and sounds very self-indulgent. Just like you said, we're just, you know, looking to pleasure ourselves with immediate gratification. Well, this doesn't make me happy, or I don't want to do that because I'm, you know, that's not what makes me happy. Whereas what you said is a very different description. Feeling and seeking profound joy. I love that. I wrote that down. Profound joy. So get clearer about distinguishing between the two, this seeking pleasure at every turn as we go through our day versus those markers of what really defines profound joy. I think delineating those two will make this a much more concrete discussion for people listening on the other side.
Yeah. Well, I want the pleasure hit, I want people to think of as the things we do in life that are they're gratifying, but in the short term, right? So you might get a really cute new pair of shoes or a really nice new car. And it's not that those things aren't going to make you happy in the moment. It's that we massively overestimate how happy ultimately they're going to make us and for how long. Researchers call this the impact bias. So thinking about those things are gratifying, right? You might get a little hit of positive emotion. It's not going to be as strong as you thought it was going to be before you bought the shoes, probably. And it's not going to last as long as you thought it was going to. We're going to adapt. We adapt to these things. So I'd like your listeners to set all of those things aside. That's actually not what we're talking about here. We Americans know how to get those hits of gratification, those hits of pleasure. And that's sort of the drive-through happiness, right? That it's not profound joy. It's not lasting. It doesn't bring us meaning or fulfillment. I think it's much more important to chase meaning than it is to chase happiness. And that, you know, the good news is, for the most part, meaning and happiness or meaning and positive emotions go hand in hand. But it gets really interesting when you start looking at when you have one without the other. So we do know that we can have a happy life, and that is very gratifying, that it's low conflict, you pretty much get whatever you want, and it's just a continual stream of this sort of gratifying things that come from consumption or a delicious meal or even a positive interaction with somebody. But people who don't have meaning in their lives as well don't ever get that sort of profound joy piece of things. And that happiness doesn't necessarily last. There are so many things that are outside of our control. So you could be leading a life that is perfectly happy, perfectly gratifying, that is very low in meaning, and your house could get hit by a tornado, right? There are external forces can come over and that happiness is gone. And if you're not left with any sort of meaning, you're really in trouble. So much of having a really fulfilling, really meaningful, really profoundly joyful life is about being able to get through the difficult bits, the boring bits, maybe even the painful bits, by making meaning out of it and sticking with that meaning piece of things versus the temporary gratification.
That's great. So I want to touch on one of the obvious factors to our happiness, and that is the people around us. Explain what being connected has to do with our overall happiness, and do you feel that the move toward more of our socializing and connecting being virtual has a negative or a positive impact on things?
Absolutely. Well, connection is probably the most important piece of our happiness. If we look back over the last 100, maybe even 200 years of research on not just happiness, but overall well-being, health, longevity, what we find, the most significant and most consistent finding, is that a person's happiness and overall well-being is best predicted by the breadth and the depth of their connections to other people, by the strength of their social ties to other people. So on the one hand, all of our social media has the potential to facilitate real life relationships, to create and strengthen those connections. And when you look carefully at the research, we actually do see some evidence that the people who spend the most time on Facebook or on some of the social media networks do actually tend to have stronger connections, but because they're using it as a tool for real life friendship. So that piece of it, I think, is great. I think what I'm most worried about, though, is the rise in virtual relationships where people create a perfect avatar of themselves and they go out into these virtual worlds They date other people. They basically strip relationships and social connections of all of their messiness, of all of their difficulty, of all the boring bits. They strip themselves of all imperfection. And what they're left with is not a real connection, but it creates a fear of real relationships that, you know, relationships, as we know, they're messy. They involve conflict. They're not always gratifying or pleasurable, but those difficult bits are what make them real, what make them so deeply gratifying from us, you know, at a soul level.
Yeah, the messiness is the human part of the
exactly.
whole equation. If you strip all that away, you strip out the humanity in the relationship. That's obviously a recipe for disaster.
Right. And so what you get are these really isolated people who are deeply lonely, but they fulfill their impulse to connect with other people through these virtual relationships. And so we are seeing that sort of trend up in Asian countries in particular, but it's also coming to the U.S. here in a pretty big way. And that's what I'm most worried about. I'm also worried a little bit about, you know, as I watch our youth communicate primarily through text and Snapchat and things like that, you know, they're certainly connected to one another in a way, but it's a very different form of communication and connection. And I think that we've sort of given them the keys to the car without teaching them how to drive. And so when you look at heavy text use, it really starts in middle school for most kids and early high school, and their social skills are so immature, right? And there's nobody teaching them good social skills that will lead to strong, positive social connections later in life. So I am worried about that. They're missing the core. This is their core learning period of how to form a positive, supportive, real life social connection. So we need to work on that.
Yeah, it's almost like a child that goes from being an infant to walking without the process of crawling. You lose all that hand-eye coordination, and there's a lot of brain development that's happening during that period of time that if you skip that process, it might actually stunt your ability to relate with the world for the rest of your existence. And it's almost kind of one of those things that seems to be taking place with this lack of a true normal human development in the social development side, the human connection side, the human communication side, because it has been basically skipped through a lot of this technology. Now, we talked about one of the more obvious points of happiness being human connection. What are some of the less obvious things that affect our happiness that we might not be fully aware of, but do trigger us on the path towards that, what I am calling the big goal here, profound joy?
You know, I think the less obvious factors that prevent our happiness, at least in today's day and age, especially among well-educated, ambitious people like your listeners and your readers, are numbing behaviors. We don't really pay that much attention to all the ways that we numb our difficult emotions. And so what I mean by a numbing behavior would be, you feel something difficult, maybe even you're just bored or whatever. So we start checking our email, or we eat the whole pan of brownies, or we spend an hour on Facebook, or we have a cocktail. For me, I stay really, really busy, right? These are all really effective ways to not feel what it is we are feeling. And the problem with numbing out feelings that we don't want to feel, or difficult emotions, or even just really negative emotions, is that the numbing behaviors are so effective, they numb out everything, right? So if we want to feel that profound joy, or even just a sense of gratitude or optimism about the future, if we want to feel positive emotions, love, if we want to feel real connection to other people, we need to let ourselves feel everything that we are feeling. And that means really just letting ourselves be present to whatever it is coming up for us. So, you know, when we're sitting at a red light, if we're feeling agitated or bored, not reaching for our phone and checking our email or sending out a text to get some sort of stimulus. Or if we're feeling grief, really just letting ourselves lean into those feelings and feel it so that we can then feel the things that bring more happiness into our lives as well.
Christine, debunk the idea that there is a single secret to happiness for us. You think it would be obvious that happiness isn't dependent on just one thing, but that idea still tends to circulate. Debunk it for us and give us a lowdown on why it's such a ridiculous notion.
You know, I think that the most ridiculous notion these days is not that there's so much a single secret to happiness or a single pill that we can take or that it's just one, you know, neurotransmitter or whatever it is, but it's that it's personality based, right? So our culture still has this sense that, oh, well, you know, she's just a cheerful person. She's just naturally happy. And it's not that their genetics don't play a role. Of course they do in many ways, but I think that the core myth that we need to shift is that it's something that happens. Happiness is something that happens mostly at a genetic level, when in fact, happiness is much better thought of as a skill or a set of skills that we need to teach our children and ourselves and practice in order to become fluent in it. So I think of happiness as a fluency, as a set of skills, and that there's not just one skill, like you've said. It's not just one thing that if you're good at it, you're guaranteed a happy life. It's a whole toolbox.
So one last question for you to end our discussion today, Christine. I want to make sure that we end with a happy thought. So share something that maybe you think about daily that automatically boosts your mood and then how we can translate that into our daily routine to make sure that we start and finish our day happy so that we have a productive and successful mindset.
I would say focus on what it is you have to be grateful for. So we tend to think of gratitude as another one of those kind of hokey emotions, but actually it's really powerful in terms of bringing more of that profound joy. And it's something that we can start and end our day with. And I actually, in the morning, I always think about, for me, my mantra is to look for the gift. And by that, I mean, even when things seem difficult, to look for something to feel grateful for in that. Where is the opportunity? Where is the learning? Difficulty is a part of life. And we tend, when we're searching for happiness, to look for the less difficult things, the more pleasurable things. And I think one real key to happiness is to find the meaning and the gift in the more difficult bits, or even just the boring bits of things. So it's just shifting the perspective from seeing difficulty to seeing opportunity, and especially an opportunity to feel grateful in that difficulty.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Christine Carter, connecting with you and you to our success community has been profoundly joyful for me. I'm sure that you have contributed to the happiness potential of millions more based on this conversation. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been joyful for me as well.